Valvoline Instant Oil Change is the quick, easy, trusted place for your next oil change. Valvoline's convenient, no appointment needed. You can even stay in your car while they do the work. You don't have to sit in some waiting room, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Their friendly, certified technicians have over 270 hours of training, and they get you in and out fast while performing a thorough, free 18-point maintenance check with your oil change. We got someone here who just experienced this, our own Aaron Blair. Blair, well, how was it?
It was awesome. I took my Jeep Jock Jams in and got a sweet oil change, and I actually brought a book because I thought it would take a while, and they had me in and out in like 15 minutes. It was awesome.
Well, also, you should point out, you can't read.
I can't, so, but I wanted people to think I could.
Yeah, but I mean, come on.
Yeah, maybe somebody hot is there, and they're like, oh, what are you reading? I'm like, oh, and then you know, now I got a date.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think that's not how people meet each other.
Didn't have time for that.
Yeah, so if you see Blair driving around in his beautifully oiled Jock Jams, give him the old thumbs up, or throw a tangerine at him. Anyway, Valvoline, they're doing it right. Visit Valvoline.com/Conan for an exclusive offer towards your next oil change. Mother's Day is May 12th. And in advance, Sona, happy Mother's Day.
Oh, thank you,
You're
Conan.
A terrific mom, and your kids are here today with
us. Did you get me a present?
Well, it's not May 12th yet, but I'm getting you one.
Okay, thank you.
Well, guess what? Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. You can shop by price category or browse curated gift lists ranging from for the mom who has everything to the gifts that are already wrapped and ready to be gifted. I like when you can go by price because I can go right down to the bottom. Get Liza something for a dollar. Sorry, baby. Top gifts include Beats headphones, digital photo frames, Polaroid cameras, and the Samsung Smart TV, The Frame.
Oh, yeah.
Shop now at Macy's.com/giftfinder. And happy Mother's Day, moms.
Hi, my name is Penn Badgley. And I feel the dull echo of imposter syndrome at the prospect of being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Really?
Yeah.
You feel like you'd be an imposter?
I just feel like I have to be honest about how, I mean, I grew up watching you. And
yes.
Like I said, when I shook your hand.
Oh my God. Yeah, you know, hold on a second. Sona just walked in. Sona.
Are you actually recording?
Oh, we're doing the show.
Podcast.
And you know what? Penn was just going on about what an honor it is to meet me. And you. You interrupted, and now it's probably out of his head.
Yeah. No, you're welcome.
Fall is here. Hear the yell. Back to school. Bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey, Conan O'Brien here. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Sitting here with my gang. We're talking Sona, Matt.
We are talking Sona.
We are. We're a gang.
Yeah, we are a gang. You're my posse.
Ride or die.
Yeah. In my group.
Ride or die.
I'm excited. We have a terrific program today, I believe. Is it okay to call it a program? I know we've discussed this before.
It's a program.
Yeah.
Old habits die hard.
They really do.
I think you just, I just like that we're a gang. Do you think we're intimidating?
Yes.
I don't
very
think
intimidating.
We are. I think you're intimidating to people.
You think he's intimidating?
Not like as a person, but you know, because you are who you are, I think you can sometimes be very intimidating to like people on the street.
Well, also I'm a tall drink of water.
Yeah.
But you're like a skinny tall, you know?
Yeah, but well muscled, chiseled. Mm. And
I was intimidated the first time I met you.
What? No, you weren't.
Yes, I was.
Really?
Sure.
I came in the room. You were kind of a wise ass. I don't remember you being
A wise ass.
You really weren't.
No.
You were a nice guy.
I was intimidated too.
Well, I'm glad. I got over it very quickly.
You know
what I'll say? Me too.
I will say that I think there are known people, obviously, whose persona is intimidating. And so I don't think they get approached that much. Mm. And I'm quite certain that I have one of the least intimidating personas of any known person because people aren't afraid to come up. Do you know what I mean? And then if you look at people like a Robert De Niro or a Sean Penn, I think movie people are different because you see them blown up on a big screen.
Yeah, but you've seen those people violent.
Yeah.
You're like you're a funny guy.
Well, thank you.
You know?
I didn't think you enjoyed my humor. Oh, well, thank you.
I don't know if I enjoy it.
Okay. But you say technically I'm in the category of funny guy.
You're in the category of a funny guy. I think that there's a difference between, like, you know, bad boys who, like, and then there's...
Well, what was that? What was that bad boy doing?
Yeah, what was that? Like, is he driving a mud truck? What is that?
Yeah. I'm a bad boy. Now I'm going to get in my truck made of mud. the wheels are just sloshing off on the sides, falling apart. You get 2 feet. Didn't get as far in my mud truck as I thought I would.
Why did I use this for a bank robbery?
No, so, yeah. I don't think I'm an intimidating presence, so.
I don't know. I think you are kind of, but I think you're, I don't know.
What an interesting conversational ploy you have.
Back in that mud truck again?
You ever see Sona when she was in the debate society? And I just think, we find in favor of Sonam Obsession. It'd be great if you just used that. You argued in front of the Supreme Court. But wait a minute. So you think a woman's right to privacy? Defend that. Well,
Plessy versus bad.
Yeah.
I think it's good. Effective.
It's very effective. It gets the job done.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about our guest today.
Oh, okay. We are.
Yeah, I am. I like this fellow. He's a fine fellow. He's a chap.
I don't know who you're going to intro right now.
I know you do. It's, you know what? It is stunning how little you prepare and how little you know.
Who do
and
you think
what?
This
it's absolutely
is?
True.
Do you guys prepare?
Oh yeah.
We write everything. This is all scripted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
We work very, very hard.
I feel like sometimes you guys have meetings and you leave me out of it.
No.
I really do.
Of course. We're trying to get stuff done.
I can contribute. I can have
who do you think today's episode guest is?
Yeah. Do you have any idea who it could be?
Not him. We already did it. Oh, I know who it is.
Who?
It's Penn Badgley.
Right.
Because you made a joke right before.
Yes. I used to say, because I love just being stupid for no reason. So whenever Penn Badgley's name comes up, someone say, yeah, blah, 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 and then you're going to talk to Penn Badgley, and I'll say more like Badge Penley. And I kept doing that over and over and over again, so much so that my kids and I were watching an old Gossip Girl, because we do watch those. They're really fun. Uh-huh. The original from the 2000s. I did that joke so many times. Yeah. You know, Penn Badgley, more like Badge Penley. I did it so many times that I subconsciously thought that was his name.
Oh,
and then
it.
I did the same thing. And so my kids said, blah, blah, blah. And I went, yeah, more like Penn Badgley. And they were like, oh my God, you just said his name correctly because you thought you were doing a bit. But you're only undoing the stupid bit you've done 50 times.
I do that all the time, spoonerizing. And you know your name spoonerized is Bonin O'Cryan?
Yeah, of course.
There's a name for doing that?
Yeah.
That's what my parents intended.
You're
that's how you were conceived.
That's okay. Okay. Back off. Back off. Back off. Ugh. That's my mother. I don't go after Winifred.
Who's Winifred? I don't know who you're talking about.
Anyway.
You're Gat Morley.
Yeah, and you're Mona Subsession. That's pretty good.
Mona.
What are you doing that?
Yeah.
Mona, why are you guys saying it like that?
I don't know.
Mona,
I'm a creep. My name's Bonin O'Cryan. And you're like shocked that I went in a creepy direction? I never thought I'd get that from Bonin.
I never thought Mona would receive that kind of response.
I'm like that when I see the Mona Lisa at the Louvre. I'm like, oh, Mona, Mona.
Wait, you're like turned on by it?
Yeah, very erotic name. Here we go. My guest today played Daniel Humphrey for 6 seasons in Gossip Girl, currently stars in the Netflix series You, which returns for a 4th season next year. He also co-hosts the podcast Pod Crushed, available wherever you get your podcasts. Very excited to talk with this gentleman today. Penn Badgley, welcome. I'm a fan of this gentleman, and I was liking, I will say he was ladling a little bit of gravy over me, and I was enjoying every second of it.
But I actually was trying to not be flattering. It's more like, And honor sounds like such a platitude. It's right. But it's just nice to be here, I guess.
Well, it's nice to have you here. It's nice to have you here. And during the pause you took, I can get someone who sounds like you to put in godlike, iconic.
You're such a humble person.
Conan, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
Nobody sounds like me.
Okay. Well, isn't there some way, Eduardo, isn't there some way that during the pause when Penn was thinking of what to say, no, Eduardo, be honest, isn't there some way we can manipulate Penn's voice to say, you are my hero?
There's a way. It won't be good, but there is a way.
But we could explain that he choked on a chip. He had eating a pita chip at that moment, and he choked.
Yeah.
And you are an inspiration.
That's how Gorley sounds.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why you turned into Yoda all of a sudden.
Quick time out. I'm hearing music coming from a device.
Oh my God,
Sona.
I'm sorry.
And when I told you this was going to be the low point of your day.
You weren't lying.
What is wrong with you?
The flattery
I'm
truly.
Sorry.
You come crashing in late.
I didn't know you were recording
yet. And what music were you listening to?
I was listening to Billie Eilish.
Okay. Well, that's a good choice.
I was enjoying my drive over here, and then I was having a really great day until I walked into this room.
I swear to God, I thought I heard music. I thought it was so subliminal. I thought I was falling in love with Penn Badgley. Seriously, like I was looking at you and you were saying these nice things to me and I heard music and I thought, I'm in love with Penn Badgley, which I'm sure a lot of people are.
You know what? Maybe it wasn't my phone and maybe you actually, I feel like you are. You've been talking about him a lot.
I have been talking. We have a lot to get into, but I will say, I have to confess up front that my children are older than yours. I have two kids, and my daughter is now 19, and my son is about to be 17. But it became a thing in our family a couple of years ago to watch the original Gossip Girl, Gossip Girl, and we would watch it, and it became our ritual. Yeah. And the kids, because they were too young when it originally happened. And so we all kind of bonded over watching it together. And then I would freak Sona out because here I am, a man well into my 80s. And and I would be at work and I would be talking about the plot line of Gossip Girl. And I know all the names.
Yeah.
That's really surprising.
And I know all this stuff. And you would say, Conan, it's like it's creepy that you know so much about what's happening.
His TV knowledge is 1970s cop dramas and Gossip Girl.
That is really, okay. All right. I'm
going to tell you something. It holds up. It holds up.
That's good to hear.
It holds up, and you have moved on. And
have I?
Yes, you.
Sure.
Yes, you have. I have certain obsessions, which is the breakfasts you guys have on that show.
Right. The waffles.
The waffles, and waffles. Rufus, your dad, is always making what looks to be like a $1,700 Four Seasons breakfast. You guys each take one little bite and then say, I gotta go, and leave.
Every single time.
Yeah. And I'm looking at all this untouched, beautiful golden brown Belgian waffles, giant piles of strawberries, giant pitchers of freshly squeezed orange juice.
Yeah.
And one man did that, and he gave up his music career to do it. But also, clearly, and this ties into what I want to talk about later on in the conversation, which is your podcast, Pod Crushed. One of the things that you talk about is people who are experiencing middle school and being awkward and having all this anxiety, and all of us felt a lot of that at that age, and it's really good to get the word out that that's how it is. And yet you first came to fame as part of this show that was showing people the most super confident.
It did not permit for that.
No one had acne.
No. Well, because we were all in our 20s.
You are. I still had acne in my 20s, Penn. I don't know what your problem is. I had acne up until Obama's second term. But no, but one of the things that what I watch now, and it's clearly the show plays to almost the camp of it, is I love watching the Chuck Bass character. He's literally calling people. You know, there's like a fireplace behind him, and he's wearing a smoking jacket.
Yeah, like he's 60 years old.
And, yeah, and he's telling people, I've got controlling interests of Krilco Industries. I bought out your shares. You're through. See yourself out. Don't let the door hit you in the ass. He's 15, and he's got a PSAT tomorrow. And I love it. I can't get enough of it. I just love all of it.
I really like this perspective. I need this perspective.
Well, but, you know, it's really great because your character is the sort of dose of reality. You're constantly looking around saying, this is many ways.
That's true. Now, this is the thing that I grappled with a lot when I was on the show, and I was clear with it about the writers, and I was you know, it was open conversation, I guess.
Right.
The thing about Dan Humphrey that it seems is that the whole point of the show is that it discovered that it wasn't worried about the real world.
Oh, no. I do think the show has a sense of humor about itself, clearly.
Absolutely.
You know, they're clearly enjoying the fact that, no, it's all what we wish we could have been at that age.
Including those of us on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. Yeah.
It's completely aspirational in that sense that, it's fantasy.
The first time that I ran across that was 90210. When that was coming along and it was such a big deal. And I remembered thinking, I know why this is so appealing to everybody. It's all what we wish high school could have been in some ways. Do you know what I mean? I wish if I knew then what I know now, if I knew how to talk to someone of the opposite sex, if I had a credit card, if I had a decent car, maybe things would have been different. We all know that they wouldn't have been.
They wouldn't have been. Yeah. Nor would they. See, this is where, you know, I think like there's levels to it. And so what you just described, I think makes it the charm of it. Right. And then I think what I grappled with during it was like also, you know, what is the net effect? It can't be measured, but what is the net effect of because it's one drop in this bucket of storytelling we've seen for the last, I don't know, you know, 50 years or something. Sure. About, you know, like glamorized, glorified youth.
Yep.
I don't feel like I'm here to really promote my podcast. It feels silly, but I do have one, and that is what we talk about.
I've been listening to your podcast, and it occurred to me that there is a. It fascinates me. There is a connection to, you know, some of the work that you were doing, you know, just getting started in your career. It is almost a whole subgenre of entertainment, which is we're going to present 17-year-olds who go to high school and we're going to show them in this way that we all kind of wish we could have been.
You know, but or want to be currently if you're like in the writer's room and you're maybe 35 and you're because really that is the way they all behave emotionally in relationship. It's far closer to that of like a 30-something or a late 20s, you know, in New York or LA. You know, it's that. It really is, I think, the sort of fantasy behavior of how adults want to be. You know, if you saw actual 15 and 16-year-olds cast in these roles, you'd be horrified.
Yeah.
You really would be horrified.
Well, it would be so funny because there'd be a real 15-year-old with cystic acne who's playing Chuck Bass going, you're through at socialist at Bass Enterprises.
Exactly. And he's vomiting from the scotch he's drinking.
Yeah. Is it, you know, this is scotch. This is us burning my throat. You're through at Basco. What are you doing up? Mother!
Yeah.
I'm trying to fire the shareholder. Go to bed. I'm sorry, he doesn't have any shares in your company. He's not old enough. You still have the company. Don't say that! You know, it's funny. Like, what you just pitched is to me, a really funny sketch of Gossip Girl played by
actual
14 and 15-year-olds shot single camera. And, you know, people making these moves like I'm off to Paris. No, you're not.
Yeah,
you're not fucking
right.
Going to Paris. You're going to go to high school.
Yeah.
By the way, don't you have a paper due tomorrow? I'm on the trail of a killer. No, you're not. finished.
Yeah, that's right. On the trail of an actual killer.
Yeah.
Doing
whatever.
The FBI's work.
Yes. Yes. They always have a scheme.
Yeah.
And it's always like, you know, okay, here's the plan. We're all going to go to Stad. We're taking a private plane to Stad. And we're going to stop them from stealing. I don't know. I love to quote Stad, but I don't really know where it is. Is Stad in Switzerland? I think it's in Switzerland.
I have no idea. You always use it as your like.
It's a go-to.
Yeah.
Someday I want to have some money nestled away in Stad. But anyway, that's a really funny idea. We'll get together and we'll produce that because actually really awkward kids and constantly their parents intervening and saying, no, you're not a shareholder. No, get back into your room and finish.
And I actually think like the quote unquote love scenes, like the real awkwardness of 2 15-year-olds kind of like barely being able to look at each other and just, you know, having, I mean, think about that. Think about the emotional maturity of a 15, 16, 17-year-old in a relationship. I mean, you think about the way that like we would hold each other's faces and look longingly and say things like,
I still have never held anyone's face. I've been married 20 years. And if I put my hands on my wife's face, I think she'd call the police. Do you know what I mean? And looked into her eyes. She'd be like, why are you looking at me?
I feel like if you were cast in one of these high school shows, it would be actually more accurate.
I could do it now. Now, at 59, if you cast me as a 19-year-old in Gossip Girl, I think I would be more convincing than 22-year-olds playing 19-year-olds.
I would even say that there's no... Okay, just practically speaking, the shot that looks good from the side of two people in love saying, I love you, you're so close, you actually can't see each other. you're out of focus. One eye is here, the other eye is there, and you're just like... And you're just like, okay, this is... you're actually... It's really absurd when you're bringing it to life.
You never actually got a good look at Blake Lively.
I wouldn't recognize her.
Just a blur. No. I can see that now, and I'm gonna look for that now when I go back. You seem uncertain about what you're. Am I talking to a waffle or Blake Lively?
It's like when you're in the front row of an IMAX.
Yeah. You know, oh yes, yes.
It's.
I mean, there's so much to talk about because I am fascinated by. I talk about this a lot, and it's an important subject for me, which is. I totally killed awkwardness as a 14, 15, 16-year-old. I owned it. I was, I got a merit badge in awkward. And so I love to talk about that and let people know. I think one of the things that I always thought is I would see people on television and think, oh, that's what they always were. And, you know, interestingly now, it's become much more of an open topic, but people... idealizing every single facet of their life rather than showing it for what it really is, which is there's tons of awkwardness, tons of humiliation. And
mostly.
Okay, well, now you're going too far. In my case, yes. But that was one of the things that I when listening to your podcast, Pod Crushed, I like the premise, which is you and two of your friends who are
and
quite
former teachers
who are very knowledgeable about this stuff are talking about this actual period of your life that people, especially now, and you look at Instagram and all social media, everybody thinks that everyone else looks like a supermodel in yoga pants, and that is it's warped. It's a funhouse mirror.
Yeah. But even, I mean, it's funny too, because I think more and more there is a booming trend of celebrities, whatever you want to call them, of authenticity, being vulnerable, talking about how that's all facade. But it doesn't, I don't think that that's a drop in the bucket compared to the decades of cultural teaching we've gotten of the opposite.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so it doesn't really, I think, land. I mean, how much did I have to kind of step over this threshold of being like, I've been watching you on my screen for over half my life, you know? And it's a strange phenomenon. You witness this image, you what can you do but ultimately glorify it, you know? And
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sake, I've tried for years. God damn it. Won't someone glorify me?
No.
No, but it's true because there's this phrase you'll hear publicists say it. I've worked with people who've said it, where you meet someone, you've probably experienced this. You meet someone in this business early on and they're very real. They're very themselves. Mm. And then you hear later, oh, they went through the machine. Yeah. You ever heard that phrase?
Yeah, I've probably said it. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens is you then see them later on and they're not quite as accessible and vulnerable. They dress a lot better, but clearly they've gone through some process in order to, and I don't know what the thinking is. Is it to make you look better on a red carpet or?
Partly.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. And it makes me, I've had that a couple of times and I've felt what saddened me, to be honest with you. And I witnessed it a few times with celebrities who I knew them really early on in their career. And then I saw them just a couple of years later when they had experienced like a real burst of fame, and I could tell then there's a distance or something isn't quite.
No, a distance is a great way to put it. I think, you know, what I went through my very cynical years. I mean, so I moved to LA when I was 12 and I was working right away, and I left when I was 20 to do Gossip Girl. And right before that, I was thinking about quitting because I'd been doing so much television. I mean, I'd been doing so much television that by the time the Gossip Girl offer came around, I was like, hey, yeah, I just don't think I can do any more of this. I mean, I'd been working for Warner Brothers at that point since I was like 14.
Well, take me through this, because let's slow it down for a second, because this one I want to hear. I know you're originally from Baltimore, is that right?
Well, so I was born there, but I really never lived there until, I mean, I was two, you know, I didn't have agency when I was two. So okay. I didn't know, I'm the only one out of all my cousins who really doesn't know Maryland as well.
So I'll take Baltimore as a bit of a technicality.
It is a technicality. You. It sounds great.
And then why did you move to L.A.?
Well, so from there, I lived in Virginia, which is very sort of idyllic suburban thing. Only child, two parents. And then the Fishers began forming. Then we sort of had to leave and go to the West Coast. We had far away. So we went to Washington State. We lived in a house that was like on a mountain side. Our neighbors were like a mile away. The driveway was like two tire tracks up the road. I lost my cat 3 days after arriving, presumably to coyotes, or, you know, cat never returned, which was heartbreaking. And because it was the end of the school year and I wasn't going to be returning to some kind of schooling for a few months, there was like no social outlet. Right. And it was in that context that...
when you said the Fishers formed, was it your parents' divorce?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Nice little metaphorical way of saying the family was falling apart,
divorced,
as they do.
Yeah. Fishers formed. Wait, what?
Fishers formed. Yes, I should clarify.
Yeah. No, yeah, I thought you were speaking geologically, but yes, your parents divorced. So that sounds...
Our house was being swallowed up by the earth, so we had to leave.
But that's rough. So you were living with your mom, your dad?
They were together, but it was falling apart. And the reason, the only reason that I'm open about that is I actually think like what puts a 12-year-old into Hollywood in any meaningful way is like it's not a great choice. Like I wouldn't recommend to anybody to do that. You know, a lot of people I grew up alongside are a case study in that, as am I, even if I look successful on one end. I mean, and just like the sort of work I've had to do to reconcile just that is, you know, it's a lot. But Washington State and a lot of isolation is what led me to acting. It was a social outlet, to be honest. It was, and on the stage performing.
What was your first big moment? Did you have a moment when it all clicked for you?
So I was playing Winthrop in The Music Man.
Oh my God, The Music Man is my dream.
Really?
Is to play Harold Hill in The Music Man.
Oh.
Because I've always thought that's what I was sort of born to do.
Right.
And basically just do the treble song and then leave. I don't need to sing that I love you to a librarian, none of that. I just want to be brought in, do the treble song, and then a helicopter comes and takes me away. It's a very unusual production of The Music Man.
It's an amazing song. But yeah, so being on stage in this community theater, that was, by the way, like 50 miles away from my home, which we would travel to every day.
Oh my God. So
it's like 100 miles every day.
But you realized, okay, this is it.
Yeah. I mean, you're bound together with like a common purpose with not just kids your age. You know, it's just people of all ages and walks of life, relatively speaking, in that place, in that corner of the world. And I was just like, this is amazing. And you know what? Soon after that, I got into radio. So actually being in a vocal booth and like this kind of thing, this is really where my professional life started at 9 years old. So, you know, one of the jokes with my podcast about middle school is that I didn't finish middle school. I didn't attend high school because I was working.
Mm-hmm. At what age did you leave middle school?
12 officially, and I was in seventh grade then.
Okay.
Didn't finish my seventh grade year. I skipped eighth grade and started homeschooling as a ninth grader, which was completely and utterly meaningless. The particular like government assisted program I was in, got a computer. And actually, soon after I took a proficiency exam that gave me the equivalent in California State to a high school diploma, so I could actually work adult hours and wouldn't have to do the whole tutor thing, which, to be honest, was preferable because it's like when you're working on set, you then have to do these 3 hours of...
You know, I've always been really suspicious of that, and most of my career has been obviously working in this variety format, so I haven't been exposed to that. But the few times that I've been on a set... And I've seen kids leaving to go be there with their tutor and then being released from the tutor so they can come back and run away from the dinosaur or whatever they're supposed to do. It always felt like this can't be great.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not. And so as long as I was going to go on this path, I actually think it was the right way because it helped me to remain excited to learn because I was not having like toxic learning experiences. Partly because I didn't finish middle school or go to high school. You know, I actually always have retained the just utter joy of reading, you know, and I think working also gave me so many experiences that acted like another kind of education.
Yeah, but it's interesting because I think a love of reading conquers all.
I agree with that.
And I stumbled upon this great quote the other day from Gertrude Stein.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, early modernist.
Sure.
You know, helped Hemingway get his start living in Paris. Anyway, but Gertrude Stein said at the end of the day, and I'm misquoting her, but basically it was at the end of the day, an education may not be very important at all. And I took that to mean it really is what you, it's how you educate yourself in so many ways that can make up for anything. I mean, there are people that have tons of education and don't know anything. And there are people who educate themselves. And I think reading is just being curious, about the world. And reading books can, you know, some of the most brilliant people I've met, I don't even know where they went to college or if they went to college, but they're, you know, autodidacts. They just teach themselves things. And I'm really in awe of them because... You know, in our country, obviously, we get really obsessed with, you know, where'd you go to school? You know, and I think there's so much education that you can do for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it also seems to me, I mean, you went to an incredible university. I feel like everybody's report from school has to do a lot more with life experience, I think, right?
Definitely. One thing everybody knows about me is that I went to Harvard, and I worked really hard in high school to go there. I was interested in going to a good college. I'm proud that I got in. I can't tell you what I learned there that I retain today. What I remember are the people. I remember meeting lots of interesting people, many of whom are still my friends to this day. I remember getting interested in comedy. I was always interested in comedy, but finding an outlet for it there. But I'm very clear with my kids that it's not Hogwarts. You don't go to these schools and they impart some magical spells to you that then take you on in life and you're a great sorcerer and you get an owl. I'm going to keep going with this.
Oh, please.
You know, Snape's involved.
I think that's enough.
Okay, I think it's...
I'd like to hear more. I don't know. I don't get this every day. So okay. I know you're sick of it.
There are different houses, you know.
Yeah, okay. Great. How many?
Well, it's interesting you say. There's Slytherin.
By what name? Please do...
But I do think it's, you know, my great education in my life has been stumbling around, making mistakes in the real world, humiliating myself, having some things go well, some things go terribly. That has been my education. And I sometimes feel badly that there's all this pressure on kids today that there are certain schools that have the golden key.
Yeah.
And if you don't get to those schools, you cannot move forward. And I think of all my heroes who... didn't go to school or went to a school I don't know or were terrible students, flunked out, and they have, you know, achieved spectacular things. And it's another thing that would probably come up on your podcast because I see it so much is I mean, schools are so much more competitive now than they were.
Yeah.
When I was applying, I don't think I'd get into any of these schools now. They're you know, kids are competing against everybody. They're competing against the very best kids in the entire world, yeah, in China and India. And it is very, very, very difficult. And I think it's a lot of pressure for a really young kid to have.
It really is. And then also once you get out and just the relevance of a degree now and just how many, do people say the job market anymore? Is that a, I mean, but I feel like I used to hear that a lot.
Used to
now,
hear it.
But now after COVID, it's like, it's a,
no one, something. No else. One has said job market in 3 years. I don't know why we're laughing.
I know.
Well, it's
everything's
the,
crumbling
it's the
around
mask
us.
The pain. It's
yeah,
the mask
the pain. Yeah. So I'm curious because I want to follow this a little bit. You start doing theater, and then how do you get into television? And what kind of roles are you doing? Are you working in television as a child?
Yes. I mean, so in Washington, it was theater and voiceover.
Right.
So I really did a lot of like radio and like video game voiceover stuff. So Seattle Children's Theater is a pretty. Then it was. I think it still is.
My wife is from Seattle, and so I've spent a lot of time there visiting her family, and we've seen many Seattle Children's Theater productions. So I'm really familiar with it, and they're fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I remember just being kind of enchanted again. Like, so I went from this community theater in a town called Monroe that was very far away from where we lived, doing the Music Man, to you know what felt like big city. Metropolitan children doing reviews. And I remember we did one musical review and then, wow, I haven't thought about this in so long. And then we did one that was not a musical, which I loved. It was called Barbie's Demise.
Oh my God.
And it was written by teenagers. And I was, you know, probably 10. So to me, they were the coolest people in the world.
Right.
Writing
sure.
some original, like radical feminist for the time. Who knows now what it, but yeah, it was literally called Barbie's Demise.
This is great.
You're coming out of my,
this is a good therapy session for you.
Yeah.
You owe me $140.
Therapy costs more than that now. Come on.
Trust me. Trust me, I know. I was knocked about $100 off.
Yeah, I can recall just this sort of bustling feeling of entering into, yeah, like I said, just this kind of metropolitan feeling of like making art. It really did feel that way.
You know? I remember very clearly, you know, when I was 14, if I saw teenagers, I mean, when I was like 12, 13, if I saw 18-year-olds, wow. It's very difficult to explain now how insane that gap is.
It's the biggest gap in the world.
It's a massive gap, and it's something that you don't get later on in life because it's not like I can say, well, you know, whatever, as a guy in my 50s, oh my God, you're 65. That's so impressive. It doesn't work that way anymore. Do you know what I mean?
No, not at all. Even from, I would even say from 20 to 40, like I'm 36, or will be 36 shortly. I'm waiting for happy birthday.
Oh, happy.
No.
Happy.
Well, you didn't say how shortly.
Yeah, well,
we were waiting to see how shortly. Is it within the
240? No, it's in a few days, but I was
happy birthday.
It was stupid. It was
happy birthday. And we're going to keep saying it to make you feel like shit. Happy birthday. Oh, no. This part's got to stay. Trust me, Sona, when she just had her birthday, and she calls it her birthday month.
Birth month. Yeah. It's not birthday month.
Yeah, okay. Birthday month sounds stupid.
But yeah, that's ridiculous.
I went to a good college. That proves I didn't say something stupid.
This proves my point exactly. I just called it birthday month.
Yeah.
Yes, but yeah. you make, no one makes a bigger deal.
I love my birthday.
If you were
Are you a big birthday person?
No, I but my wife is.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. What if you were, what were you going to say?
If you were Penn, you would be celebrating starting several weeks before your birthday and then extending several months afterwards.
This would be part of birth month if
right,
I were you.
Right.
You know, that's
you wouldn't
how...
be here is the point. You'd be off.
Yeah.
I would bring in a cake that I brought myself then make everybody
and
sing
then,
happy birthday
yeah,
to me.
And you'd charge it to the show. And she's laughing because that's exactly
what
true.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible to have the flexibility to work in all sorts of places, whether it's taking video calls from the park or emailing large files while you're grocery shopping. Sona, this is good for you.
Is it?
Because you're always
doing whatever work you do for me from fun locations.
But I like blaming it on not having reception.
I know, but you can't do that here. Working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network, which is why you should check out T-Mobile, Sona.
Okay.
Then you got no excuses. They're America's largest and fastest 5G network. With T-Mobile, you'll be covered in more places with the 5G speed you need for your life on the go. Plus, they also cover more highway miles with 5G than anybody else. Check it out if you don't believe me. Hey, Blay, you've got T-Mobile, right?
I do. I was actually just up in the woods in Idlewild. It was fantastic for the weekend, and my T-Mobile didn't miss it. My T-Mobile phone didn't miss it.
You know, I wouldn't think you'd need a cell phone because you speak so loudly into a microphone.
Well, I had to look some stuff up.
Just take it down.
I didn't know when brunch was.
I can hear him.
When the restaurant's open for brunch.
Okay.
So I used my T-Mobile coverage to check
terrific,
out brunch.
Blay. That's all right. Anyway, wherever you are, you know, take it from the loud-speaking Blay. If you're on the go, you want to be in the know, you want to make the show.
What?
T-Mobile.
Okay.
That's the one for you.
That was
I should
weird.
Have rhymed it with go. Anyway, find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today. Coverage not available in some areas. Fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speed Test Intelligence Data Q3 2023. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com. On the way in today, Sona, I was thinking about just how much has changed over the years.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, we were all dancing the jitterbug and the watusi.
Okay.
And then you grow up now and there's mosh pits and everything's gone cuckoo. There's this new thing called rap. I don't know what's happening anymore. But guess what? In a world full of change, there's one thing that hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. The great taste of Miller Lite. Are you with me on this?
Oh, yeah. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And you know, another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling.
Yeah.
I hate a filling beer. When I have a filling beer, I just want to sit down in a beanbag chair for 6 days, but not with Miller Lite. So what's the best thing about the original light beer?
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1975, the big debate in America was what's more important, that it's less filling, Miller Lite, or it tastes great.
Yeah.
The cool thing is when we all realized it's both.
Okay.
It's less filling and it tastes great.
Yeah, all right. Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. Miller Lite keeps it simple. Undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Conan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer.
Yeah.
Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer. Come on, if most people are being honest, no one really knows what you do for work, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, especially if you're in a what I like to call B2B.
Oh,
you know?
What is that?
I'll explain.
Okay.
That's a business doing business with other businesses. You
okay.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I call it B2B. It's a little thing. It's also, it's a boy band I'm working on. Anyway, fortunately, LinkedIn has a network of professionals who get what you do, and you can reach the right people who matter most to your company because they're LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
LinkedIn has over, this is the fun part to say, 1 billion members.
Are you serious?
Yeah. That's more people than are on Earth because there are people on the moon using it and Saturn. That's over 1 billion members on its platform, including 70 million decision makers. God, I'd like to meet a decision maker. Since LinkedIn members are regularly updating their work history, you can precisely build a target audience by job title, industry, company, and more. Man, you can reach the right people for your, I'm going to say it again, B2B business with LinkedIn ads.
Yeah.
Gets even better because LinkedIn will give you a $100 credit on your next campaign.
Hmm.
There you go. Just go to LinkedIn.com/Team Coco to claim your credit. That's LinkedIn.com/Team Coco. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be. So you come to LA at some point and you're doing, do you know then that like, okay, this is, I can do this. I can do this for a living. I can be on television.
I know you're doing voiceovers for a bit.
Yeah, so what happened was, I guess I started doing auditions for commercials and like movies. Right. In fact, from what I recall, do you remember this movie Mercury Rising?
Yeah.
With Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
And I believe at the time, a child named Miko Hughes. Mm-hmm. That role was the first audition I had, putting myself on tape in Seattle. I can remember vividly the casting office. Again, things I've not recalled in a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like had repeated callbacks on that. Really was invested in the, this actually sounds like in a lot of ways sort of reductive and problematic. But at the time, you didn't see a lot of representation of people with autism or disabled. Mm-hmm. And certainly you didn't have disabled actors playing those people. So I was, I watched Rain Man and was really motivated as a young artist, as a young performer, about this idea of like really inhabiting somebody else's sort of like frame of mind and heart. And you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It was actually really exciting, like working on those mannerisms and stuff to play an autistic child. And then years later, like at 17 or 18 years old, I had a meeting with like the VP of casting at Warner Brothers or something. And she, I almost feel silly saying it, but from what I remember, she said she remembered my tape and that I was evidently one of the last names in the running for that. And I was like, oh, I never heard that. That's cool. But that's to say that, at probably 9 or 10 years old, I mean, I was like actively pursuing what would become our, career in film and TV, and it felt good, for all the stuff I mentioned earlier about the culture here that you can't avoid, and that a child is like alone in the ocean a little bit, doesn't have the tools to really recognize. But apart from that, I was like authentically pursuing some kind of career as an artist, and I liked that. It felt really good, and then I started working, and then.
It's hard, that's the other thing too, is that it's again, you want to talk about people idealizing things, the career and the work that you've done, being in the business, having success is idealized by a lot of people.
Totally, yeah.
And I remember one of the first things when I first got into the business, especially on camera, someone gave me some advice: never complain. Mm. Never be caught complaining. And I thought, yeah. Oh, that's true. Because I remember once we had the author Frank McCord on, who's this, great Irish writer who wrote Angela's Ashes. And he talks about his terrible upbringing, and literally being impoverished. And he'd written these amazing works about his really tough childhood in Ireland in like the 1930s and 40s. And I remembered we had him on the show, and the show's over, and we had just a really tough, long string of shows in a row. And I walked out, and I'm pulling my tie off, and I went, oh, my God, man, this gig sometimes just really gets to me. And I forgot who I was talking to. Mm. I'm talking to Frank McCourt, the guy who is famous for writing about his impoverished childhood in Ireland. And he went, well, I bet there's a lot of other feckin' people who'd be willing to do it if you'd want to give it up, Conan. And I'm like, no, Mr. McCourt. No, I'm so happy that because I immediately, here I am with my makeup on.
Yeah, right.
Wearing a suit jacket, and I've just chatted and done some banter and been very highly compensated for it. And I said, oh, man, this job sometimes, you're feeling like you're a little feckin' tired of your job, are you? And I thought, Jesus Christ. But the times I've been around, especially single camera, and I had a little bit of experience with it a couple of months ago, and I was stunned at how hard everybody's working.
Yeah, really. The hours are long and stuff.
Yeah, and not just the actors are there, but then the people in makeup are there. So the actors are showing up at like 6 in the morning, but the people in hair and makeup are showing up at 4:30 in the morning to get everything ready for them. And they're packing up after the actors go home. I just was blown away.
Yeah.
And now I look at these single camera shows and movies very differently. I think, wait a minute, every shot I'm seeing, it was done 55 different ways.
Yeah, and it took 5 months for like 4 minutes of footage with some of these big ones, I mean, it's a behemoth enterprise, and it really is like, it's an amazing thing to be a part of. And I agree with you about this. Complaining is, in this industry, it's definitely a bad look. Mm-hmm. I think the, you know, the only time that I'm forthcoming or transparent about the process is more of like as a witness to help people to not idealize it in a way that is sort of like, I don't know, it just leads to more and more fantasy. You know what I mean? It's like I personally love what I do, and I'm also constantly taking stock of like the culture of the industry. It's just, yeah, it's like really, really intense.
I think you're bringing up a good point, which is you need to love it. Hmm. You need to love it.
Are you willing to like give it your absolute all?
Yeah. And I always say, are you willing to feed, like remove your leg and feed it into a wood chipper to do this because you love it that much? And if the answer is yes, then you have your answer. I think you and I both know people who've got into this because they thought, if I get famous, this will be the salve and the ointment that will cure my insecurities, the fact that I was a nerd, the fact that no one, the girl I liked didn't pay attention to me. This will cure all of those wounds. Mm. And I know people that felt that way, got famous. That didn't happen. It doesn't fix. If you've got a hole inside you, you still have that hole. And they become enraged about it. They're furious.
Yeah.
They're rich and recognizable, and they're really angry because it didn't fix the thing that they wanted to fix.
And and at that point, the hill is really tall.
Yeah.
The peak is very far away because, I mean, also, you know, again, I hope in this context is clear, like not at all complaining about it. It's like bearing witness to this reality. We know that like fame and wealth, how many more documentaries about are the world's biggest icons and most talented people who, how many more do we need to see who've fallen and collapsed? Like, you know, like it just helps us understand the forces at work, like certainly never be ungrateful. And then like, let's not paper over how it's,
There's always a cost. Yeah. So, and there's a cost to everything. And so you just need to be reasonable and you need to see both sides of it and weigh them.
Yeah.
And sometimes if the cost gets too high, you need to track that as well. And I think the big antidote, something you've done, I've done, is find your partner, have kids. That is huge. And then invest in that because the rest of it will come and go. But my wife assures me she will never leave me. And I make her renew that vow every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a ticking time bomb.
You think she's on the way out?
No. All it takes is one face hold.
I know. That's right. I'm watching way too many Gossip Girls these days. My daughter
covering her ears.
Yeah. It's also, you know, in this modern era, like the idea of taking a woman's face and holding it still.
Yeah.
While you say things like, I'm going to hold your face right here so that you have to, so I can mansplain something to you.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that.
Has Tack ever held
Tack
your face?
Tack has never held my face. He's never been like, you know.
What about the
God.
Oh, the little that. I do that to myself.
Fingers on that.
Is that weird?
It's a little
autoerotic.
Yeah. It's feline.
Do you make that face when you do it?
I do this. Yeah. I make kind of a weird pouting face as I stroke my own chin.
That's weird.
It got me through fifth, sixth, seventh grade.
Okay. Did you do it in class? Like
sometimes. The teacher would say, Conan, stop that. And I'd go,
Why'd you do that noise, though?
It's a sound.
I guess it's a podcast.
Yeah, that's a habit I have to get rid of.
Yeah, you should stop grazing your cheek like that. That's just weird.
I remember I've talked about Sex, Lies, and Videotape. James Spader, when that movie came out, I remember they wanted to show him pleasuring himself, but in a way that was acceptable in the late 80s. So he'd have no shirt on, and he'd just be rubbing his fingers across the top of his chest.
Oh.
And I remembered that took me completely out of the movie.
Really weird.
Like, oh, okay. That doesn't seem that efficient. That's. I'm sorry. I don't think that's going to get the job done.
It depends on how long you got. I mean, You know what's funny about that is that now cut to, I don't know what the rating is on my show, you, but
yeah,
it's like,
I was going
to
say,
I'm now famous for, among other things, masturbating.
Right. Well, thing is, I'm on your show. It's even in the pilot. They have it happening in the pilot.
Yes.
You are watching the object of your affection from across the street, and you start taking care of business, and you're not what we call spader baiting. You are you are really doing it, and then I'm wondering, is there direction involved?
Oh, yeah.
What does the director say?
First of all, what's interesting about this is it is on 19th Street in Gramercy, which is the first street I lived on in New York City. So it was the added bit of surreality for me is that it very much was like a neighborhood street for me. Like I was very much at home, but now surrounded by a film crew at like, 11 p.m. at night. And by the way, like, keep in mind, not looking at anything real. I'm looking at an X, a tape mark.
Right. They're holding there's like a fishing pole with a golf ball hanging off of it. And they're saying, just look at that and pretend that it's an erotic woman.
You don't realize how awkward it's going to be until you just got to go ahead and act like that. And one of the things that I struggled with a lot when I first took the role was like, I don't want to lean away from the horrific aspects of this person. I don't want to be just, as we've said, it's hard not to glorify actually almost anything you see on camera. So I'm going to just be conscious of that. So there were two things that I did that were, and again, I don't know what happened. I don't remember what they used. It may not be this way in the show, but what I did up until the director came and was like, you can't do that anymore, is that I was slow and my eyes were open. And I just, I was like, I am going to be very slow and I am not gonna fucking blink. And
I like that a director came over and said, you've got to stop that now.
And at some point he comes up and he was trying to be very kind, and he was like, hey, so I think we're gonna have to get you to close your eyes.
Well, now I know why I didn't get this role.
And I remember I was because I was already very conscious of not wanting to be like sexily masturbating outside of the street. It's like, it's very intense to play this person. And and I was kind of, I was already like, why? Like, tell me.
Why are my eyes closed?
Yeah, just being very principled. And this is where, at this point, I don't know what I was thinking as an actor, but just as a person who was uncomfortable, I just was kind of ready to go. By the way, my version of confrontational, the people pleaser that I am working all my life in Hollywood, was like, okay. In my mind, I'm like, why? I don't remember what I actually said.
I wish Frank McCord had been there. If you don't want to fucking jerk off, I bet that someone else would be willing to do it for a couple of hundred fucking thousand dollars. I'm not comfortable with this. Ah, you don't want to whack it, do you? Well, let me tell you something.
That started to turn into like a rap almost at the end. That had really.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I don't remember anybody telling me to speed up, but I think I just did because it felt so weird to be going so slow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they use what they use. Whatever. You can go back and watch whatever it is. I don't remember what it is. I don't remember what it is.
I think the director just put it on fast forward. He sped up the film. So you were doing it really slow, but it's like. And in the background, cars are going really fast. And the sun comes up and goes down like three times. Because apparently you were doing it for days. Well, you know what? I am. I feel like I'm a natural for your podcast, Pod Crushed. I think I should.
Oh,
if
definitely.
You actually.
Yeah.
If you actually want to come on, I mean, we would love to have you.
Because, if you're looking for people with an awkward past who need to come clean, I'm your man.
A deep well, I bet.
Well, that's past, present, and future.
What are you talking about? I turned into such a cool guy. Now I am Chuck Bass.
You're about the age. Yeah, you're getting to the age of the Chuck Bass disposition. Chuck Bass honestly had the disposition of like a Yakuza member. Like, is. just points and.
Oh, it's so true. And also the amount of brown liquor.
Yeah.
You know, that's
yeah.
the thing I love is it'll be like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and he's throwing back.
Drinking like, it like water.
Yeah. Drinking it like water. And I'm like, oh, no, that fucks you up.
Yeah.
And you're 17. You have algebra in an hour.
Algebra.
You're through at Bass Industries. Yeah, he really is Montgomery Burns from The Simpsons. He's Mr. Burns. But, well, this made me really happy. I was so glad that you could come in and do this. And you know what blew me away is that we never met.
Yeah, no, never. I mean,
And you know, I was on my way in here and I was like, wait a minute, I never met Penn Badgley. Huh. And told my family that I was going to be interviewing you today and got major points.
Because, that's great to
yeah.
hear.
No, seriously, that it is a ritual for us. And my daughter's off at college now, but when we get, when we all get together, one of their things is we watch some Gossip Girls.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Still.
That's really cool to hear, yeah. Honestly. That's,
sometimes,
that's nice.
Yeah, and my wife sees me watching one alone, I get in trouble. Because
oh.
suddenly I'm a pervert.
It's because your eyes are open.
I had no shirt on and I'm just.
You can't spader bait.
Just spader baiting.
An episode of
I'm
Gossip
standing.
Girl.
I have my pants on. I'm standing.
You're standing.
And I'm standing. And
it was spader standing?
And it's like, yeah, no, he's lying down, but I'm standing because I've taken the spader method and I'm do it standing.
You're propping
up. Yeah, and I'm rubbing my chest and I'm watching a Gossip Girl from like 2006.
And you have no expression on your face, right?
Because no,
the one
it's
you're
just
doing
dead.
It now, it's
oh.
just a completely dead face.
He just did a really dead face.
Oh, this is on video. They'll see it. Yeah.
Oh, no, don't look right. Your camera's right there. Don't look right at
it. And I'm watching, you know, an episode, and it's like, you know, Rufus just made waffles, and I'm like, the thing is,
it's not the waffles.
It's the waffles that I'm. It's not the beautiful women. It's look at all that. Breakfast, those carbs.
The crafts.
No one's having any. Why are you wearing a vest again?
You really do. You really do.
Oh, I watch. I gotta go. I can't eat any of this. Eat it! It's the fucking greatest
you
breakfast.
You are the only person who's talked about the breakfast on that show. I think everybody, is that really?
It was like an inside joke with us.
Well, yeah. With you guys, but people watching probably weren't paying attention to the breakfast.
No.
Rufus
yeah.
waffles are fan like, sites. Rufus's waffles are, as far as I'm aware, they're a thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think
if you went.
You said fan sites.
No, I think if you went on, I'm saying if you went on a fan
if
site
one
or if
was
you
to go.
Go into that world, I'm sure they talk about
did
it.
Did you go yeah. on a
fan No,
did
I did
go,
not.
It's
I did
okay
not,
if you did.
Well, I didn't go on as myself. No, I'm saying that anyone who watches the show,
yeah.
if you're talking to a sentient person, at some point you notice that think of the greatest brunch you've ever seen. Like you're at a rich person's wedding
yeah.
and they put out a brunch that costs a couple hundred thousand
yes,
dollars.
Every
that
time,
is the breakfast that they have.
I've watched the
a
show. I just was paying attention to what everybody was wearing, how attractive everybody
all
was.
All I see is the amazing breakfast, okay. the waffles.
All of them.
All of it. And you guys always take a little nibble.
Yeah.
And then I'm out of here. And you take off. Mm-hmm. And then you go and get a coffee someplace. I'm sorry. I took this in a weird direction. We were here to help young people understand that their problems and their issues and that it's okay to feel awkward. And I took it to my own place, which is I want to go back in time and finish those breakfasts.
You want to live inside of a waffle nook. They were really good. And I have to say, I always wanted to eat more.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
I did.
Well,
I'm imagining Frank McCord as being like,
oh, breakfast, hon! You wish you'd had another.
There's children dying. Look at these fucking waffles.
Oh, you're sorry. Oh, Penn Badgley didn't get enough free waffles, did he? Hey, Penn, this has been a real pleasure.
Yeah,
a real
thank
joy.
You so, much.
So cool talking to you. And you know, we didn't even get to, we'll scratch the surface next time, but I know you're a guitar guy. I know you play a Telecaster.
Yeah.
I'm a Fender guy. I love Fenders. So we got to talk about that sometime.
I would love that. You're a phenomenal player from what I understand.
No, I am not. I am not.
Well,
I am,
you wouldn't say that.
No, but I know what I am, which is I am largely a self-taught hack, and I don't know theory. And
yeah, as am I. Same.
And there's a lot that whenever I play with people who can really play, I feel terrible. So I'm always very open about that.
Totally
but I enjoy it.
Yeah,
I really enjoy it.
I'm very much in the same boat. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll continue. continue this on your podcast.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, and happy early birthday.
Thank you.
Birth month.
Yeah,
you're going to stretch this out. You know, Scotty's cares about the environment and has strong values they stand behind. Plus, Scotty's facial tissues are super soft, strong, and absorbent, and easy on the wallet. Whether you've got allergies or just a case of the sniffles, stock up on Scotty's facial tissues so you can stop wiping your nose on your sleeve. Isn't that disgusting when people do that, Sona?
I just don't like that.
No, I don't like it either. I like to wipe my nose on your sleeve, but not my sleeve. Yeah.
Well, my sleeve is made of Scotty's tissues, so that's a
I wonder. That's a very cool fashion statement. Hey, and stop offering guests toilet paper to blow their nose into. That's disgusting. Hand them a Scotty's facial tissue instead. You can find Scotty's facial tissues that come in beautiful box designs. Put one in every room. Why not? Make your guest feel like a king or queen. Hmm. If someone offers me a tissue, sometimes people say to me, Conan, would you like a tissue? I say, is it Scotty's? And if it's not, I just swat it away.
Oh, okay.
Scotty's is better at what counts. For more information, visit scottysfacial.com. You know, it's only a matter of time until your check engine light comes on, which could equal an expensive repair bill, and a new engine can cost up to $6,000.
Don't I know it?
But this is why you need this product I'm about to mention right now.
Okay.
CarShield. Mm. CarShield offers plans with low monthly rates that you can pay for your expensive repairs on your out-of-warranty car, truck, or SUV. It's so nice to have that protection of CarShield.
I know.
I believe. That's my belief. Some people have other beliefs, maybe religious beliefs. I think CarShield. CarShield plans provide protection on up to 5,000 major parts and systems, including items like transmission, engine, even your entertainment system. Mm. Just call CarShield and choose the mechanic to do the work. CarShield administrators will handle the rest and save you money. Look, I saw your car today. You've got a beautiful car, but you've got to haul your family around in this car. This is a vital piece of machinery for you. You need CarShield.
I do. And, you know, I don't take care of my cars very well. So CarShield, it would definitely come in.
You know, and also with their A rating from the BBB, don't ask me, CarShield is the name you can trust to save you money on covered auto repairs. Now's the time to make the smart choice and protect yourself from the sky-high auto repair bills. Visit CarShield.com/Conan. Save 20% today. Again, that's CarShield.com/Conan to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Conan to lock in your price today.
A few episodes ago on the Live from the Beacon Theater Tracy Morgan show, we discussed something that we need to follow up on.
Okay.
And that is...
Yes.
Oh, my
Jupe.
God. The Jupe scent for men.
It's so much more purple than I thought.
Let me bring people up to speed.
Please.
Tracy's on the show at the Beacon Theater, Tracy Morgan, the great Tracy Morgan. And just before the show, they say Tracy's here. So I go down to say hi to him. And he gives me a big hug. And I am suddenly transported to a better world because he has this aroma. He wears, and I asked him about it, he wears a cologne. But of course, being Tracy, I just said, what are you wearing? Jupe! Jupe! And he's yelling, Jupe! And I didn't know what he was talking about.
Me either.
I think I pulled the crowd. I don't think a lot of people knew what Jupe was.
None of us on stage did.
Yeah, we didn't know on stage.
I don't know about colognes where there's an exclamation point in the name.
It is a red flag to me.
Yeah.
And also the color of the cologne is literally a red flag because that's the color of your urine when you're dying of kidney failure. It is a cranberry blood.
Yeah.
You just pour that in a toilet after someone's used it and you will freak them out.
Also, it just says Jupe exclamation mark home. And there's literally not another word on the bottle like anything.
Nothing.
Well, I was saying to Tracy, I think, you know, do you think this would up my game with this? And he was, I have to say, Tracy's a very convincing person. He's a very powerful personality and he doesn't half recommend anything. Jupe. He really, really thought my life would be enhanced if I had some Jupe on me.
Do you remember what else you said? You said that you would put some on go home, not say anything, and see what Liza said about
yes,
it.
Yes, I will do that.
Yeah, so and, we can report back.
Okay, this is interesting. My wife has been in New York City talking to lawyers for some reason. But that's not the important thing. No, she's been in New York, and she gets back today. So this is perfect, because when I go home, I'm not going to say anything, and I'm just going to see what happens.
Yeah. You're going to introduce her to the new Conan.
Yeah.
Right?
So try some
the
on
Jupe
now.
The Jupe Conan.
Yeah. I'm gonna try this. So, oh, it's got a little sprayer. And what do you do? Do you spray it right on?
Do you want to smell it
I
first?
I think technically you're supposed to spray it and then walk into it.
Let me just smell it first.
That's so close. Okay.
I just fired it at myself.
It was backwards.
I am not kidding. I just held my wrist out, held the bottle up, and then saw this shit spray into my eyes. I wasn't trying
you
to do
clearly
a...
clearly never yeah. wore a cologne.
Of course not. I've never worn a cologne.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about that.
What do you think?
I don't need it.
Well,
it smells
I'm getting
like it could devegetate brain forests.
I don't want to be mean, but it does smell like this motel I used to stay in with my family in Lake Tahoe. I'm not even joking.
What if Tracy was here, he'd probably say, I love that motel.
The Jupe.
I was there all the time.
The Jupe Inn.
I used to check in. I used to roll around on the sheets. I Jupe it up and roll around on the sheets. It is, well, it's...
It's sweet, that's for sure.
It's got a sweetness to it.
Whoa.
I'm trying to think of what notes are you getting?
It's not very strong.
Here, you try some on your wrist. Don't worry
I'm
about it.
I'm getting like 1930s grandma.
Yeah, grandma, right?
Yeah.
Not and very I don't, masculine.
Yeah, pass it around, take a swig.
On the bottle it says, and now with more grandma. They just grind them up. What? I have to say, Tracy smelled really good.
He did. I don't know if he was wearing.
He said he wore a half a bottle.
Yeah, he puts a lot of it on. And I do think that's what he was wearing. He doesn't lie about Jupe.
Okay. All right. Maybe it smells differently.
It reminds me of, you know, Old Spice was a really cheap thing. But I have a fondness for that because my grandpa and dad wore it. And I probably wouldn't balk if I had to wear that. But it's really cheap, you know?
Yeah.
I never put on a cologne. Ever.
I'm not really a cologne guy either.
I used to wear perfume.
But I might start wearing Jupe.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think? Do you think people would accept me if I started wearing Jupe?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I think you're not a cologne guy.
Hey, do you think Tracy would do an ad with me for Jupe?
Oh,
like
that's
on the subway?
Oh my God.
Wouldn't that be great?
Sure he would.
Me and Tracy and it's for Jupe.
I want to see you pouring it on yourself.
You guys should come up with your own fragrance and you read it through the back and it's just Conan and Tracy Morgan for Pooge.
Pooge.
You see it backwards?
Yeah.
I think there are some people who are cologne people and you're not a cologne person.
No, I'm not a cologne person.
Do you go to the club a lot?
Do you hit the clubs?
I've never hit the clubs.
Yeah, me either.
Get bottle service at the club?
Never hit the clubs. But you used to hit the clubs all the time.
Lots of cologne.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you wear a scent?
Is it to cover?
I wear a perfume, yeah.
But why do you think, are there women that like a man to wear a scent?
Yeah, I think so. I used to like nice scents on guys, you know, but it's, you know, that was a different time. That was a different sauna.
Oh.
Well, you were a married mother of twin boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Back so you then. Shouldn't be hungering for another man's scent.
No. And also now I'm worried about wearing scents because what if the boys react weirdly to it? So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't need it.
Okay. Well, I'm all down with, you know, it's not like I have a product right now that I'm really tethered to. Never really had one, but why not Jupe?
Let me ask you this. When you go home tonight, Liza will have been out of town. She's going to come home and you're going to have this really sweet perfume on you. And she's going to think, well, no, she won't.
She was not going to think that.
No.
She is not going to think that.
She's going to think, he's doing a bit for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. What's this podcast bit? Liza sleeps very soundly at night, knowing that that I'm not out there.
She might even just be in for a little.
I did say to her once, not long ago, I said, if you did find out that I was cheating on you, isn't there some part of you that would be impressed with my time
that's
management
what I meant,
skills?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what I never have understood. I have no desire to be that person. Yeah. I am very happy with my choice, but I'm always, when people do that,
I know.
And I always think, wait a minute, how do you keep all that shit straight?
And the energy and time.
Yeah, I got to go see, you know, Matt Gourley and Adam Sachs to talk about the, and then we're in a restaurant, you know, with Fifi, and and she's like, gee, Mr. O'Brien, you really think you're going to get me my own podcast? You bet, Fifi. I'll get you your own podcast. How's that chicken milanese? Eh? Gee, Mr. O'Brien, you're such a sophisticated... Wait a minute, that's the phone. Oh, hello, Liza. I'm here with Eduardo. Wait, did I say... Oh, no, Matt and Adam died. That's why I couldn't meet with them and with Eduardo. I mean, I would
and
fuck
then
it
you have
all
to kill us.
Yeah, then I'd have to kill you.
Yeah.
Gee, Mr. O'Brien, why are we killing people? I like that. That's my...
That Conan would wear a cologne.
That's my mistress. She's chomping gum.
Yeah.
She's got big high heels.
Off the bus from Kansas to get a podcast.
To get a podcast. Yeah. Gee, Mr. O'Brien, you're the bee's knees.
Well, we'll report back on what Liza says about your... new scent.
Well, before this airs, people may read about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Conan O'Brien shot by wife.
Not for cheating, but for wearing that
scent. No, just for wearing the scent. Yeah, Jupe. Look for it. Where do you look for it?
Amazon, $35 a bottle.
Is that true? It's, yeah. I thought it was like a Rite Aid scent.
I bet it is.
I think it's one of those, you know, like pharmacy colognes.
You know what? I like it. I like the way my wrist smells right now, and I like the way I'm going to smell when I go home tonight. And we will report back on how Conan wearing Jupe and not saying a word to his wife goes over.
I'd give it one more spray just to make sure it lasts.
Oh, no. I am going to...
You're going to dab it on.
I might take this with me.
Okay, yeah.
And hit myself hard before I walk in the door.
Yeah.
Okay. I want it to be noticeable.
Yeah. Okay, just that'll
and
be
And then I'll be have to do CPR on our cats.
Okay. $35, so you owe me $35.
Did you put it on the show card?
I don't have a show card.
Fantastic. Just as I decreed it. All right. Peace out. Tupac.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy.
Supervising producer Aaron Blair. Associate talent producer Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. This episode was mixed and edited by me, Brett Morris.
You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It could be featured on a future episode. Please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. Because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know. Refill? Everyone flies their own way. Delta. Keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.